All right, welcome. Welcome to the Shoreline Zoos podcast. I'm your host, Joe Chad, and I'm along with Matt Broder of Woodward Sports, and you see him on Twitter or X or whatever the hell you call it, because I don't call it Twitter. Well, I call it Twitter, but I call it X, and I really don't know what to call it. And then we got Mayank on here, which if you're not familiar with Mayank, he posts on the Shoreline Zoos page all the time, and usually he's getting roasted by Meek Robertson, so that's another thing. But we're here talking, obviously we're a week away from the draft, and I know it's Matt's favorite topic. We might talk about uniforms, just maybe. Because I know it's his favorite topic, so that's what we might talk about. But no, first of all, thank you for coming on, Matt. I appreciate it, and it's really good to have you on. Now, you're new to the podcast because, you know, we haven't had you on before, but.
Yeah, number one. This is the first time. Thanks so much for having me, by the way. I'm excited to talk Lions, Tigers, whatever you guys want to talk about. I'm pumped.
See, I've had Dan Miller on before. I've had Larry Warford on before. Robert Porcher on before. But
my favorites.
So it's always good to have good people on there, like the non-negative media that we have in this town.
I'm just trying to follow what Jared Goff is telling me to do.
So my first thing about it is okay, because I'm interested to hear what you think, because I know Mayank has an opinion. I know I have an opinion, because Mayank always tells me his opinion. But what did you think of their free agency class, their trade with Bank, you know, Carlton and everything that came in between? Because I think that sets up for this draft where they can go anywhere in this draft. Like, it's wide open.
Yeah. Yeah. So I loved it. I loved it, but like if I were to give it a grade, I would give it like a B plus, because there are still question marks with this free agency class. Like, there are injury concerns all over the place, but not just Carlton Davis, but DJ Reader, Marcus Davenport. Some of these guys I'm very optimistic about. It's not a guarantee that they're going to be healthy for the extent of their contract. So what it did do was it put some pieces into either starting roles or depth roles where you really are, like Brad said down in Florida, Brad Holmes, they're raising the floor. The depth that they've added is making this team a much more complete team, a much more complete roster, which, like you alluded to, now that it becomes draft time, they can really go any direction. They still have a couple like little needs, but it's much more filled out. So I think it was a great free agency class. I probably need to start talking about this more, but I factor in the coaching acquisitions that they made too, bringing in Terrell Williams, Deshae Townsend, as a huge piece of this offseason, especially considering the guys they've drafted over the last couple of years. The development, especially on defense, needs to improve. So, you know, I would give it a B+. I absolutely love the players, though.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up Terrell Williams, because I know people that work for the Tennessee Titans, and, well, they did work for them. I think one of them still works for the Tennessee Titans, but he said that you're going to love what you're getting in that coach, because he raised the level of a lot of those defensive linemen that are in Tennessee. You know, you had, obviously you had
Simmons,
and then you had Autry, and there was another one, O'Hara Landry, who Harold Landry's nothing to shake a stick about, but he made him into a useful edge rusher that could, you know, he was a linebacker, but he was an edge rusher. He's like that tweener kind of thing. And they made him into a guy that could rush the passer a lot. And he was one of their best edge rushers for like a year and a half. But, and even Bud Dupree was like, he was there for a year, and same thing. They kind of got the most out of him. And yeah. You look at guys like Pascal and Broderick Martin and James Houston, and you're like, there's a lot of young talent on this defense, especially the defensive line. And I think that they are held back by the coach. That's my opinion. I keep telling people this, but no one listens to me. But like, your coaching is the biggest thing. Like, I look at the Lions wide receiver room, and then everyone asks, why is it so good? Look at the coach. Look at Hank Fraley. Yeah, yes, and look at Hank Fraley with the offensive line. I mean, sometimes they're starting Coyote Oshika. Now, Coyote Oshika might be a serviceable player, but when he's going against he's going against Eric Armstead in the NFC Championship game, like, to be prepared for that is pretty well. Like, that, I didn't expect him to be great. He wasn't great by any means, but he was serviceable, and that's what you kind of want out of a coach.
Agreed.
Yeah, you're right. And you mentioned some Austin Pascal, Broderick Martin, even thinking of like the Levi Onwuzurikes and the Okwaras. They're either the defensive line here in Detroit, the players have either panned out where they're, you know, stars or you know, major contributing starters like Hutch and McNeil, or they've almost been like a no show. Like that you've gotten nothing out of them. You haven't gotten anything out of Onwuzurike and and the Okwara brothers. So you know, just developing this version, the Lions version of a Bud Dupree, or the guys you said where you just get the most out of them. I like John Scott Jr., the former defensive line coach.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. Like it was his first year coaching too. His first year coaching at the professional level. So while I don't think Dan Campbell would say anything bad about him, I think he realized the ability to upgrade your coaching staff. You can't just like wait around if a guy like Terrell Williams is on the market. You got to go upgrade there too.
Well, I always tell people, like, you know, one of the things, you know, you're a baseball guy, so you'll get this, but A.J. Hinch, one of the things that he did really well was he went and got Chris Fetter from Michigan as the pitching coach. And that's like
my teammate.
So some of those little things that you do in the course of an offseason, like that could really make or break your team, no matter how you look at it. Like, you know, those are the types of the moves that, like, they go overlooked by the, you know, the regular fan. You know, the regular fan, they're looking at like, oh, draft picks and free agent signings. And most of the time, you're going to get better from within more than you're going to get better from without. You know, a lot of these
teams. And that's what they want anyway. They want to be able to do that. Like, drafting and developing, like, that is Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell and this regime. They're sticking to that. It'll be interesting to see when these contracts of their veteran players, of their drafted rookies and Jared Goffs and such, see how if at all, it changes. I don't think it will. I think this is going to be the philosophy.
Yeah, it's so interesting the way that they've kind of put it together, though, because, like, and I'm going to let Mayock speak because he's been radio silent for the last couple of days.
Right? I've been waiting, but go ahead.
Next time, just speak up. It's all right. We're good. But cut like me off. You know, yeah, exactly. But you know, like, do you look at Jared Goff and him getting an extension? Amon-Ra St. Brown and him getting an extension because you think those two are going to get the extensions. Then you look down the road at Sewell getting an extension. Hutch is going to get an extension. You can't.
They have preliminary talks with Decker too.
Yeah, well, I think they'll get a reasonable contract done with Decker, to be honest, because he's at the end.
Ali McNeil, Kirby Joseph, Laporta. This stuff sneaks up on them.
And this is what people don't understand. I do a Red Wings podcast too, and a lot of people are like, man, why don't we just do this? And why don't we do this? And it's like, it's called a salary cap. Like I don't know what you want them to do. Like, you can't go out and sign everybody. This isn't Major League Baseball where you can go out and sign, you know, Marcus Semien and Corey Seager in the same offseason. Like, that just doesn't happen that way. So it's kind of important for your team to build within than try to build with, you know, from the outside, because you see it with the Jets. Like, the Jets do that routinely. And how often does that work? Zero.
Not often. Well, I mean, paying off for the Packers, though. The Packers got all these picks coming up.
Well, I mean, the Jets, you got to look at how they are. Like, they're basically, like, all in, like, what if scenarios? Like, can Aaron Rodgers stay healthy? Can this guy stay healthy? Can that guy stay healthy? I mean, they're teetering at the end of the cliff right now, because if one thing goes, one domino falls, they all fall. Like, that's how I look at it when it comes to stuff.
And that's what happened last year, Mayock. Like, the big domino fell, and the season was over, four plays in.
Oh, man. And that's how you know you got a good team. Like, if your general manager is forward-thinking, you're not one player is not really going to make a difference. Now, if you lose your quarterback, I think that's a pretty big deal. Like, you're kind of going to be teetering.
That's the league for you. If you lose your quarterback, then generally it's over.
But they weren't even serviceable. They were just like kind of like their offense was so bad. It was like, what did you do? Like, obviously, first of all, I didn't even think Aaron Rodgers would make it through the regular season because that offensive line was so bad. Okay. So, like, you look at it from the perspective as that, like, you're like, okay, maybe this was kind of a sign of things to come, you know? Like, maybe he would have got killed because Zach Wilson was getting killed back there. So, and just interesting.
Yeah, and that's the thing with, like, Zach Wilson. Like, even, like, I know he's bad, but the thing is, like, you can't really say, like, the Jets even put him in a scenario where he can succeed. Like, Yeah, like I'm sure even Usain Bolt, if he was back there playing QB, even he would get smashed like at some point because you can't outrun like three or four guys no matter how fast you are. Like it's just awful.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because one of the things that I laugh about is like all these people they always say like, oh, if you got a running quarterback, you can always, you know, get outside the pocket and make things happen, you know. And then I always tell them like, do you understand? Because it was my dad was on the practice squad for Lions for 3 years. That's so awesome. So when I talked to some of his former teammates, you know, one of them was Robert Porsche. But when I talk to those guys, I think about it, they always say like this, there are bigger men that can run just as fast as you. Like it's not nothing like it's not like high school where that one guy just can get away, right? It's not like that. Like Lamar Jackson, he's a kind of a cheat code. Patrick Mahomes, alien.
They're outliers. Like, right. So those guys are special.
Like those are the guys that you like. And I always laugh when people say that, you know, we're all looking for the next Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. I'm like, well, you're going to be keep looking for a long time. It's like kind of that you got to get lucky more than good. And I look at teams like that are consistently being a team that's at the top of the league. It's because they're built right. They have a good general manager. They build it from within. They don't really build from without. Like I posted on Twitter when this free agency was coming, like, for the first 2 days, the Ravens didn't make a move, the Chiefs didn't make a move, the 49ers didn't make a move, and then the Lions didn't make a move. But there's a reason for that. Because all these other teams, they sign these guys for an exorbitant amount of money, you know, like the Christian Wilkins or whatever the case may be. And they're chasing talent. They know that talent can't come to them.
And I see what you just did there, by the way. The four teams in the NFC and AFC playoff, the NFC and AFC championship game, like, yep. Those are the teams. It feels weird to have Detroit have the Lions in that group. But the point you made is true. Like, everybody was calling for them to make these moves, spend the money. Like, in that first – not even the first day of free agency. Like, 3 days before when people were starting to talk, it was like, what are the Lions doing? And Mac, I want to get your opinion. But the last thing I'll say with these guys that they've drafted coming up, like, if your guys pan out, you obviously want to pay the guys you drafted if possible. And maybe you have budget set aside for that or however you're working the books, but not many GMs or teams can, as confident as they are, they can't prepare for these guys to turn into superstars, like a superstar contract, a record setting contract that Penei Sewell is going to get, that Aiden Hutchinson might get. Amon-Ra St. Brown, maybe it's not going to reset the market, but when you talk about a fourth round pick turning into a $30 million wide receiver, that's more money that you got to pay, and they want to keep those guys. So finding these one-year contracts, these two-year contracts, maybe there are some injury concerns, but they're the right type of player. They're the right type of guys. They understand they're trying to earn their next contract. That's what I like so much about the guys they brought in. It's not they're not handicapping the team for the future, but they're taking a chance on these guys, and all of them, getting high upside.
And sometimes you swing and sometimes you miss, and that's the one thing. But what do you think, Mayor?
You remember that post I put on the podcast page where it was a 2022 draft class, the top 10 deals that were there, and Carlton Davis was one of those guys on the deal. They said only one guy on that list was the only guy still with his original team, not cut, not traded, not released, and his deal is the same. Everyone else took a pay cut or they're gone for their team. So they said a lot of mistakes are going to be made. Like, a lot of mistakes are going to be made with these record-setting deals. I mean, that Christian Wilkins deal, I mean, he had close to double-digit sacks for that 1 year. Can he keep up that pace on that kind of deal? That's kind of scary. So I think they're playing it right. I think they're building from within with guys who are proven to be good with this team right now. And I think that's better than going and taking a chance on a guy that you're going to spend like $25, $30 million on, especially like a one-year wonder kind of guy, and you don't want to be caught up in that. You remember that 2019 free agency class that we got? Justin Coleman, Jesse James, Trey Flowers. The mess we still had to clean up that mess two years into this regime. Like that. Like, we don't want to be caught in that again, do we?
No. And Christian Wilkins next to Max Crosby, has it could be special, but you have all that money tied up in two players.
Right.
Like, A, what if an injury happens? Or B, that the Raiders, they need a lot of work. Like, they they need some more pieces than just a defensive tackle. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
See, I expect the Raiders to make a move like that, to be honest, because, like, when you think about the Raiders, they usually just make a move to kind of, I don't know, sell tickets, kind of be out in notoriety, you know, the social impact of, like, oh, social media is going to be ablaze with Vegas Raiders stuff. Like, that's what their kind of MO is. And, like, you notice with all these good teams, like, I always tell people, like, one of the teams that was, like, the most nonchalant, well, there's two teams, the most nonchalant teams that I've ever known in my entire life watching sports was the Patriots and the Spurs. And they were always just, they would never make any bold moves. They'd make the right moves. So every effing year, they're there. And it's like, okay.
I want to be one of those teams.
Exactly. Right. Would you rather be the Spurs or the Patriots? Or would you rather be like the Raiders or the Dolphins, like teams that haven't won? And I think as Lions fans, and, you know, people in the media, like, we've seen the Lions do this before. Like, I remember when they spent money on Damian Woody, that record-setting contract for a guard. You know, like you said, Trey Flowers. Yeah, like, all these guys, you're like, okay, none of them worked out. Like, one of their best signings was Glover Quinn. Remember that? When they signed Glover Quinn,
yeah.
People were like, yeah. Oh, that guy sucks. Right, that was one of their best signings. So, like, I always tell people I was interested in your feedback, Matt, because and Mayox, because, like, I feel like a lot of people are overreacting. But when we look at the draft and going into this draft class, like, it opens up a variety of ways that you can go. You know what I'm saying? And I've seen some of your mock drafts. you know, like,
I try to, like, hit every I try to hit different scenarios and, like, what could Brad Holmes be thinking
right.
in this draft and right. see how it plays out a little differently. But you're right. It could go 50 different directions at 29 or wherever they end up picking first.
And it's kind of my – so I got a bold take about this, but I truly think that they're going to move up for a player. I think it's either going to be a wide receiver or a corner. That's my two. Because
like one of the top three wide receivers, or do you put Brian Thomas Jr. in? Like a move up? Brian Thomas, yeah. That's your guy.
Yeah, I think Thomas is a guy that would be very Brad Holmes-esque, because you look at his contested catch rate, it's right there with, like, St. Brown. I said Sewell, but St. Brown and Antoine Green, like, both those guys had high contested catch rates. So I look at that because there's a track record there. And then you look at the cornerback position, I really do think that they like some of these corners in the draft. And, you know, they've had all these guys for in-person visits, so – Got to read the tea leaves, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I'm not expecting you to know what Brad Holmes is going to do, but of those two positions, you just said Brian Thomas Jr. Who's that cornerback that you would trade up for?
Oh, Quentinion Mitchell.
That's your guy.
From Toledo. Yeah. Him or
– I'm a Terrion Arnold.
I like Terrion Arnold too.
Yeah, I do too.
I like people – I love that people think that Kool-Aid is good, but I don't really think he's that great. Like, I watched him against Michigan – and, you know, Roman Wilson catch that he made in the clutch in the fourth quarter, that was Kool-Aid's guy. Like, every time I watch this guy, in the most clutch moments, he's giving up, like, these clutch passes. I'm like, well, I don't want him as a Lion. Like, I think, like,
you like his name.
That's part of it. And he wears one at Bama, just like J-Mo and Gibbs, so I want to keep that tradition.
Well, he's going to have to fight J-Mo or Gibbs for that number. I guarantee you that. Number one, J-Mo wants that number bad. And when Cam Sutton got released, he probably was like, where's my number?
Yeah. We haven't heard that yet.
He did that last year, too. He was like, I'm sorry whoever got that jersey, but I need that Uno, man. And then they give it to Sutton. Now he's going to be the one that says, yeah, give me that number because I'm faster than Gibbs.
And that was, like, the weirdest thing that happened this whole entire offseason, Cam Sutton stuff. You know, like, that was, like, the weirdest stuff.
So weird.
I don't understand.
Because we came into this, like, that was right after free agency. So, like, you're, like, going, nothing's happening. You know, I was in Tennessee when it happened. Like, all of a sudden, boom. I'm like, what? Like, is this real?
Yeah.
You just texted me, like, I think a couple days before, saying that he was playing with a broken foot or something like that.
Yeah, he was playing with a broken foot.
And I was just getting hyped, like, oh, yeah, get Carlton Davis
in. Yeah, I was getting hyped, too, because I heard from someone from his family, like, oh, he was playing with a broken foot. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I'll tell Mayock, I'll tell people that I know. And the next thing you know, the Hillsborough County Sheriff is looking for him. I'm like, what?
Warrant Wednesday.
Like, yeah, they just said Warrant Wednesday. They just put his picture up there. I was trying to find out if it was actually our camera, son.
Yeah, is this like a doppelganger? Or like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
It was so weird to see it like that. Like, that was, although it's everywhere on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, like the amount of scams or people pretending to be, you know, others. I got bit by it a month or two ago. So it was just like weird that a police department would put that, or a sheriff's department would put that out. And then how everything played out. I was looking forward to seeing him actually in a role that suited him on the Lions and not having to go step up and be the number one and play the outside. But hopefully they can recoup some of that money, the Lions, and figure out what to do next. But we can tell they got rid of him pretty fast. They're not they're not putting up with any of that in the locker room.
No, I think when you have a culture that you built, I think it's very important that you have a hardline stance on the issue. You know what I'm saying? And with your owner being a woman, like it's kind of a different deal. Like there's no Jerry Jones. Oh yeah, Greg Hardy, you can beat the shit out of someone. You're good. You know, it's like that's not the way it goes.
We're not gonna do that. Yeah.
No. So I've said this a lot in the podcast, but I've talked about it on other podcasts too, like with other people. But when they recoup that money, I think it's going to come off the books in June. That's when it can come off the books. That's like kind of when the NFL kind of does their.
It was like a post June 1st designated him as a post June 1st release or cut.
Yeah.
Whatever the cap hit ends up being, it can spread out over the next two seasons. Like if they did it before or
sometimes if the player gets suspended from the NFL, like even if it's internally gets suspended from the NFL, like they can wipe the contract entirely clean. The only thing that you would not be able, you know, you're not able to recoup back is the signing bonuses, which you would totally understand that. But, and that's where I kind of think like, because I've been talking to some New Orleans people, right? Some people that cover the Saints and some people that are like close to the Saints. And I keep hearing this Lattimore to the Lions talk. And I just, the more I hear, and there was one person I heard of in from particular, and he's got more people in that building than I have or anybody has, because he's there. And I was like, he said maybe Lattimore goes to the Lions after June 1st, like kind of like that July trade that kind of breaks up things. I think if he doesn't get a cornerback in the draft, I think that's where they're going to go, to be honest.
Yeah, they could be waiting for, whether it's Lattimore or Gilmore hasn't signed, but just a veteran cornerback that doesn't necessarily need to be there for these offseason workouts.
Yep.
Maybe they wait until training camp to see a team that loses a cornerback to injury, where their value then goes up and they can go sign a 1-year deal with someone that needs them more. Or maybe they are just waiting for a team like the Lions, see what they do with the draft. That's why Brad Holmes has left this all open. Like, he has so much flexibility. He can move up. He can move down. He can stay put. He might not be done in free agency. Like there are, I'm happy with how things have gone, but there are so many more moves that he could make. And if he didn't make any, I'd still be okay. It's very weird feeling.
Unpredictability.
It's weird for us because we've never been in this position, to be honest. Like, and Mayock's going to speak, but we've never been in this situation where we've been able to go, okay, we're going to go into the draft and we don't have to look for this. We don't have to look for that. Like, they can get guys for depth. Like, we're talking about, like, they could draft a guy like, you know, the kid from Oregon, Jackson Powers, you know, that for the backup Ragnow next year if he
I'd be happy he's retired
or something. But like that's what you have. Like Peter Schrager had Zach Frazier from West Virginia going to the Detroit Lions, and a lot of people are like, I don't want that. It's like, guys,
you're getting to
the point where you are going to start to draft for depth. Like, that means that you're pretty damn good, so cut the shit.
I like that.
Mayock, what are you thinking?
I mean, Joe's completely right. We're not drafting for starting position anymore. We're drafting to keep guys kind of in the system, maybe even have them sit out a year so that when the time comes for them to be ready, that they'll be ready. I don't think we want a situation like Okuda where he's just chucked into the fire in man coverage against Davante Adams his first game without anyone there to help him. So, my take is – let's, you know, if they draft a corner, he's going to be behind a few good corners. He can learn, develop, kind of grow in time. Because corner is a hard position to come into in this league. It's probably, in my opinion, it's the hardest position to kind of learn on the fly and be put in there against some of the guys' best receivers, especially if you're drafted in the first round. You're expected to be a number one corner. So my take
is... You mean the position where you're running backwards while some of the greatest athletes in the world are running at you?
No, yeah, it's totally easy. I'd probably get up there and do it. Let's do it. I'll crack my leg on the first play and go out.
Right, me too.
When I was in scouting school, and Bill Polian was the teacher for like the scouting school, right? So awesome. it was a scouting school for scouts that wanted to be scouts. You know, you can go into there. So that's what I did for a couple years in my 20s or whatever. But what he always said is the three hardest positions to transition to from college football to NFL is, besides the quarterback, because we all know the quarterback is the hardest position to transition to. He said tight end, he said cornerback, and he said linebacker. And the reason why he said tight end is because you're learning not just pass, you're not just learning to catch the ball, but you're learning blocking assignments and you're trying to get on terms with your quarterback. Linebackers, you're reading the whole offense. Like if you're like Jared Davis, you're not going to make it that far in the league. And then, you know, cornerback, like you said, you're going against the top athletes in this position, in this profession. Like you got, and if you're a Lions cornerback, you got Justin Jefferson in your division. You got what's Christian Watson in your division.
DJ Moore.
You got DJ Moore in your division. You potentially might have like a Roman Dunze in your division. Like that's kind of like you're playing the Colts.
You're playing the Texans. You're playing the Rams. You're playing all these teams with like two or three studs.
Right. And that's kind of where you got to go, like, because I've noticed with Brad Holmes, this is what I've noticed in his where he drafts and where he signs these corners or whatever, but they all seem to be good tacklers. They're not really these guys that are gonna, you know, be lockdown corners. They're not gonna be like the Darrell Revises or, you know, the vintage Stephon Gilmore, like where they were just lockdown. They're gonna be able to tackle after the catch. And that's what they did. That's what they did in LA for a little bit, but they've gotten away from it since Brad Holmes has left, ironically. But that's what they do. They look for the cornerback that can tackle after the catch. And if you're being honest with yourself, would you rather have a cornerback that can catch, tackle, or just be like locked down and then get burned sometimes? You know, can't make that precise tackle. That's kind of what you got away.
So, like the Cowboys corner, then.
Well, the Cowboys. The Cowboys corners. Well, who was it? Okay, it was the Cowboys. Jordan. It was the Buccaneers. It was the Vikings, and it was the Seahawks that had the worst tackling after the catch cornerbacks.
Wow.
So you look at all those teams and you go, that's why whenever I saw like the Lions are playing the Buccaneers in the divisional, I was like, thank freaking God, dude.
Yeah.
Thank the Lord. Because like I'm around St. Brown, this is like a field day for him. He's like, all right. Cool. You can't tackle. All right. It's going to be a rough day, you know?
That's the way the rules are changing with the hip drop tackle being flagged and stuff. Right. It's just getting to be maybe softer isn't the right word, or maybe it is. You wonder how much that starts to factor in these GM's decisions, or how far in the future is Brad Holmes thinking? Like, does he target a wide receiver like Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky, who's a yards after catch machine? Like he breaks all the tackle. He's a Debo Samuel-ish type versus a different type of player, a defense. Like where are you? Where is Brad putting his priorities? Where is he putting his resources? Does he go first round wide receiver because of that, or because he likes? Like the game is changing so much where that is going to start to factor in at some point. Like you guys were talking about with cornerbacks in the first round, I'm not necessarily sold on taking a cornerback at 29 or moving up, but the reason I would do it is because of that five-year contract. Like Mike said, it's very rare that they're going to come in year one and be a lockdown or even just like a top-tier cornerback one. So to have them in your system for another year, I think that's why they've been signing these one-year contracts, especially – in the secondary, they're going to draft their Lions future cornerback number one, whether it's this year or next year, whenever it is, They're going to keep paying one-year contracts until they find their guy.
What people don't realize, remember Darius Slay? Like, I remember he got benched in his rookie year. And then he came out the second year, he was a little bit better. Then he came out third year, and that's when he turned it on. So that's kind of like the growth that you have. And you just made it, and you made an interesting point about the game changing, you know. And I was telling Mayank, you know this, and Matt, I told you this on the pod, but before the pod, but I play hockey, and I know that with hockey, the game has changed so much. It's just, it's now speed over size. So if you got speed, you're going to be a better hockey player. And I look at the rules that are changing in the NFL, and I think it's more geared towards offense. So, like, if you're Brad Holmes, like, everything is on the table. Because now they can't do the hip drop tackle with Laporta. They can't, you know, if you do draft a guy like Brian Thomas, they can't do that to him. They can't touch him. Like, there's, you know, these pass interference rules. Like, the game has changed where, like, offense is kind of, like, the thing. And you rather have the better offense than the better defense. And that's my opinion. Because if you look at these, you know, obviously you looked in the Super Bowl and you looked at the 49ers and the Chiefs and they had good defenses. But a lot of it was their offense because that's how they got there. Like, you don't see a team get to the Super Bowl with just their defense. Like, the Baltimore Ravens that were in 2001, 2000, that don't exist anymore.
Right, it doesn't. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, going back to the last point for how defenses are changing, Emmanuel Mosley, like, he is a good yards after catch corner, like, when he's healthy. Like, all his, like, when I was watching his highlights from San Fran, when he was on DK Metcalf, most of the times that he stopped him was after Metcalf caught the ball, he was immediately on him and got him down. So I know it's pretty big, like, you know, the injuries, back-to-back ACLs, but you know, it's kind of hard to find guys who can just go and tackle like that. Witherspoon was benched this year, or last year, I'm sorry, because of tackling issues, from what I understand, with Seattle. So, yep. And he was a guy on, I think, my draft board. I think Joe was talking about him prior to the draft. Mm-hmm. Like, that could factor into what they want to do.
I think he's right there.
Yeah. Well, at least we get the image or the type of player, the type of cornerback that Brad Holmes and this Lions team are targeting. You see similarities with Mosley, with Carlton Davis, with Amik Robertson and Sutton. Although they're different types of cornerbacks, they all – and shoot, I think this term gets overused, but it needs to be reserved for certain people. But there's some dogs in that secondary. Like, that's the type of competitive attitude that Amik Robertson and Carlton Davis bring. And Emmanuel Mosley, when he was with San Francisco, you're spot on, Mike. Like, that – he is – top of the NFL potential. So yeah. they got their 1 year contract again. I hope that works out. I hope he comes back, you know, for a playoff run late in the year and helps this team.
Yeah. You know, that's a funny part about it. Cause like you just said, the term dog gets overused a lot. Like I see like people saying, oh, this guy's a dog. And I'm like, yeah, he's a dog for a different reason. Like that's the reason he's a dog.
Right.
But like you got
right,
you got like a guy like, you know, I would consider like Jack Campbell a dog. I would consider Brian Branch like a dog, you know. Mm-hmm. And you got these guys that the Lions have drafted that, you know, they're only going to get better. Like the Melifanu, the Kirby Josephs, even a guy like, you could even see a guy like Stephen Gilmore who's on their roster get better. Like I just remember when Dan Campbell fired Aubrey Pleasant, you remember that? And that defense took off. Like there was that little glimpse of, he knew he had the talent there, but he needed the right coaching to get it done. And I think what we talked about earlier with the coaching and with the talent that's coming back from the draft that are, you know, they were drafted last year, the year before, there's always a shot that they can get a lot better. So that's another thing you weigh.
So all that being said, that's what I'm thinking, and I reserve judgment for myself until maybe next Wednesday or Thursday, but I'm thinking today that they're going offensive line or receiver in the first round, or at least maybe their first pick. Maybe they trade back in the early second round, but right. Like, I'm starting to think they go that direction. I really like some of the cornerbacks in rounds 3 and 4 and 5. Like there's some talent that there aren't the level of Terrion Arnold or Quinion Mitchell or Nate Wiggins and these guys, but they're guys that would fit what Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes want. want to draft. So if you can go up and get one of the top offensive linemen, one of that top, maybe not the top three, but a Brian Thomas, or that next tier of like 5 through 15 is pretty good. And they're going to be gone by the third round. So maybe I prioritize that early in the draft and then go and get your cornerback in rounds 3, 4, 5, maybe 6. There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, I like the cornerbacks in this draft. I like, there's one guy I like in particular that a lot of people don't even notice, but Josh Wallace. Josh Wallace from Michigan. Now I know a lot of people are
to talk about Michigan football players. no one takes it seriously.
I'm a Michigan State fan, okay? Full disclosure. Now I almost went to Ohio State for baseball, which would have been funny as hell with Matt here. But I don't look at it like, oh, it's a Michigan guy. I look at that Michigan team and I go, damn, there are so many damn studs from that team. And there are still studs on that team, like Mason Graham and, you know, Colston Loveland are still there. Like, if I look at a guy like Chris Jenkins, that's a good player that can be drafted by the Lions. You know?
61, 73. Yeah, Josh, I would love Chris Jenkins.
Josh Wallace late in the draft would be a fantastic pitch because when San Marcello, when they didn't want to target San Marcello, or they didn't want to target Will Johnson, because Will Johnson, another dog that they got there still. And we say dog because good he's point. Literally a freaking
he's
a dog. Animal.
He's one who it's reserved for.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's reserved for. Like, Will Johnson is awesome. And it's like, I look at a guy like Josh Wallace, and they picked on him at Ohio State. They picked on him against Alabama. They picked on him against when they were in the national championship game. And he had his best games in those games. Like, that's just what I look at. And one of the things I've come to find out with Brett Holmes is he loves guys that are good in clutch moments. And I say that with, like, the reason I drafted Josh Pascal, because some of his best games were against Tennessee and Georgia. Like, those were some of his best games. And then you look at Brian Branch. I mean, Brian Branch speaks for himself, but like a Sam Laporta, you know, Jack Campbell, like, his best games were against Michigan, like a good team. So when I look at Brett Holmes and the way he kind of evaluates them on like who they play and how they play. Like, when you look at these Alabama guys that he's, when you look at the Alabama guys he's drafted, like Jameson Williams, Brian Branch, like there's a sign.
Even you're talking about Brian Thomas Jr., who's going to be a first rounder, but his ability to produce and be a professional as the number two in college, like, he's a number one on every team, but maybe Ohio State and his own team, possibly Washington too. Like, yeah. So to be able to be the number two, be okay with that and still produce, like, you're being put into an offense where you might not get more than 4 or 5 targets a game. Is that okay with you? That's not okay with a lot of wide receivers.
No.
Especially in this new era, NIL and college football. Things are changing. That's the stuff. I'm so glad you said that. That's the stuff that they look at. Look at Jalen Harrell. Like, that's one of those two, like a Brad Holmes guy, if I've ever seen one, who's going to be available in round 4, 5, 6, 7.
And the thing about Jalen Harrell, I know you just mentioned him, but like, his pass rush win rate was so effing good. It was like 21%. It was one of the best in the draft class this year. So you're hitting on something. Like, again, like, it doesn't have to be like a lot of these people, they think that, especially on this podcast, and they're going to be listening to this and they're going to be like, uh-oh. What are you bad mouthing me for? But you guys know as well as anyone that when I post on that page and you're like, why aren't we drafting this guy in the first round? It's like, well, you know, I'm pretty sure that if you didn't want to draft if you wanted to draft the wide receiver in the first round when Amaron came out, you wouldn't have got Amaron. So, like, what are we talking about? Like, this is how it works. Like, this is how it works. Like, we never had general managers with the Detroit Lions that can go into the fourth round, go into the fifth round, get a guy, sixth round, get a guy, or even undrafted pool. Like, you know, you look at a guy like Jerry Jacobs.
That's
amazing.
I love this. Keep going with that. I love where you're going.
I know Jerry Jacobs was kind of like a fan pick on guy, but the thing about Jerry Jacobs was he started a lot of games as an undrafted free agent. You don't see that very much.
Right.
And he was he helped you in that season where Okuda went down. He was a huge, he was the best cornerback on that team. Like he helped you get to where we are now. It's like the Brandon Inge or Robert Fick, like some of those Tigers that got you from the worst team in baseball. They weren't able to stick around for the playoff runs, but they were pieces that you have to value. Jerry Jacobs, he struggled in some games, but I will thank him. Well, I guess I'm a media, so I probably can't thank him for being good. I won't talk bad about him.
No, I think the one game that stands out to me with Jerry Jacobs is that Green Bay game, because he had two interceptions that game. So tell me how big of a difference that is. And when you got a good general manager, you're basically limitless. That's what I basically go to. Like, these people that think like the draft ends after the first or second round, like, got news for you. The best teams draft well into the fifth, sixth, seventh round, even undrafted free agents. I mean, look at the 49ers. Dre Greenlaw was like a fifth round pick. Fred Warner, I think he was a third round pick. Like, those.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you have a good general manager. So that's what it goes down to. So.
Well, you can find talent basically anywhere in the draft. You can find it undrafted. You can find it in the late rounds, mid rounds. I mean, Brad Holmes is pretty much a prime example of that. I mean, we just extended Brock Wright. Technically, the 49ers wanted Brock Wright on a three-year deal that we matched. And that's just an undrafted guy that is likely going to be our second tight end for the next 3 years with Sam Laporta for 3 years. So, I mean, just the fact that you found this guy, developed him, and then now you have him for three more years with this kind of level, I think that's important. But I wanted to touch on, like you said with Jerry Jacobs, like he's not going to be here anymore for, like, the contending years. Tracy Walker, he was here. He got that extension, and then he went down with that injury. And then even when he came back in coverage, he was just not the same. So we lose him, and it was – kind of devastating, but we're going to be losing guys that we thought would be here for the long term. Like when we extended Romeo Okwara, I thought that was like the most brilliant move Brad Holmes could make, and then he tears the Achilles, and then he's gone. So,
yeah,
it's sad. Like I keep saying, it's sad, but it's necessary. Necessary sacrifices to keep going and keep improving and keep improving. Coaching, players, anywhere really.
Well, I think Dan Campbell and Matt, you can talk about this, but. I think Dan Campbell alluded to that in like his last presser. Like there are some guys that aren't going to be here next year that we really like. Like, I think that was kind of his thing. Like, okay, we love Jerry, we love Tracy, but they can't be with us right now. You know, like that's just the way it goes. And unfortunately, when you're in the business of winning and losing, there's no time for feelings. Like, there's no time for feeling.
Yeah, it's difficult for especially Lions fans. Like, we're not used to seeing. To letting good players go. We're used to maybe seeing some good players leave, but we're not used to letting good players go. And that's part of that next step. And it's a good thing. It kind of sucks because you develop this connection with certain players. You root for them. You stand by them, but there's just not enough money to go around. There's so much talent. Like, that's the goal. I'm not saying they're necessarily there yet, but they're very close. And the same goes for coaching. Like, the better coaches you have, they're going to go – you want them to go get OC and DC jobs or get promoted to through the ranks. Like, we're going to have to say goodbye to Ben Johnson at something. Like, he's been a massive part of this turnaround, of this incredible offense. We're going to have to say goodbye. And it hurts, and it leaves questions. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think that's what the good organizations do. And – yeah, you know, when we look at this draft, man, like this is the main part, though, and then we'll kind of like end it because, you know, obviously you got things to do. Yeah, it's all good.
I'm down to chop it up.
We got some stuff, but when you look at this draft, I think the most important part about this draft is just getting the right players that are going to fit this culture. And I'm not saying just draft a player because of the culture, but I'm saying draft a player because he fits this team. And he can slide right in. What you said about Brian Thomas is exactly right. Like, if you're looking for a wide receiver that is selfless, that's him. Like, that's him. Because you got Jamison Williams, you got Laporta, and you got a guy like Amara. You're not going to get the ball, all the targets. But when you get the targets, you're going to make the most of it. And that's what kind of I look at, like, with Brian Thomas. And then you look at guys like, you know, the Oregon center Jackson Powers. And you got, like, you know, Zach Frazier, who every time you hear something about this kid, like I heard a story from one of the West Virginia outlets or whatever, that he basically like he played on a broken leg for like 2 months of the year, which is absolutely insane. But like, that's the kind of stuff that you look for, because I don't care how good you are, if you don't have that it factor to you, I don't care how good you are. Like, I really don't. Like, you could be like the best. You could be the Justin Jefferson, or you could be a, you know, one of the best offensive linemen. But if you can't, like, you don't have that it thing in your mind. And as an athlete, you know that. This, Matt, it's the same thing. Like, you have to, there's a determination. There's a factor in you that when the game's on the line, you're not gonna power down.
Yeah, it can't be measured. It's not showing up on any stat sheet or at the combine or anything. But those are what the Detroit Lions front office, that they factor that in, or they value that so much. That is Jack Campbell. That is Brian Branch. These guys who all they care about is football.
Right.
It's not even necessarily I want to be the best football players. I love football. I want to be the best. I want to be the best for my teammates. Those are the guys they're bringing in. Those are the guys they're signing as free agents. So it's huge. It's a huge part of it, and it's why, you know, I doubt – I don't have an example, but I doubt they go get a guy who's been at, you know, three or four different colleges. Like, they who, you know, use the transfer portal. I think they want to understand that their players are loyal and they're willing to, you know, run the route 100% or block for their running backs when they're not going to get the ball, even though they're only going to get targeted three times a game. Like, whether that's Brian Thomas or my guy Ladd McConkey, or insert all Michigan football players in. I'll let you fill in those blanks. It's true. That's what Jim Harbaugh built that team on. That's what Mikey Sanderstil is all about. I got laughed off out of the room a couple weeks ago when I mocked Mikey doing it, Mikey to the Lions at 29, and maybe that's too early, but I see more and more each day saying, oh, wait, Mikey, Lions, or earlier.
What you say about Mikey, I think he's going to go in the first round. I do. And people I talk to, they say the same thing. These people, they're not media people. Like, they're in the business. So, like, they're saying, like, this kid's got it. And what you said about Harbaugh, I said this, like, I said this a couple months ago, but, like, that Michigan team, it's the last of a dying breed, especially in this transfer portal era. Like, they had no transfers, virtually none that transferred out. They had some guys that were grad transfers that transferred in, but they didn't have a guy that was on his, like, third school. They had guys that were bought in, like, you know, a guy like Josh Wallace I mentioned earlier. He came from UMass. Like, of course he's going to come to Michigan, you know? A guy like Henderson, the tackle, who was offensive lineman. He played guard tackle, yes, last year. But he came from Arizona State. So, like, I mean, those are some of the things that you look at and you go, okay, those are identifiers of these guys are legit. Like, these guys are there to win. And, like, especially with this new era of the transfer portal where these kids are, like, transferring every other time because – coach hurt my feelings, or coach didn't want to start me, or I didn't get the NIL that I was expected to get. Like, that's
just... or you're like Deion Sanders, who just comes in and says, "Hey, y'all are trash. Hit the portal."
Yeah, and then you see Deion Sanders trying to recruit, and that, the recruit. Look at it. Go look at his recruiting rankings.
Uh-huh. And telling the NFL already, my kids are not going to play for these teams. Like, I started to like him at the beginning, but he's getting a little, maybe he's pushing a little too much. But like you're saying, real quick, and for your viewers who maybe know, I went to Michigan. I like Michigan. Take the college off of, like, when I name these players as, like, the top four draft picks for the Lions, pretend they didn't go to Michigan. But if you had four, maybe I can do five. But, like, if your draft order went Mikey Sanders still, Roman Wilson, Chris Jenkins, Jalen Harold, and Josh Wallace, or Zinter, or Trevor Keegan. Like, forget that they went to Michigan. That's a damn good draft.
Yeah, because you got guys that have a track record, and then you look at a guy like Zach Zenner and Trevor Keegan as, like, there's a lot of parts of their game that they can mold underneath, like a guy like Zeitler. Like, I look at a guy like Trevor Keegan, right? If they draft him late in the draft, it's a steal because he gets to learn under Graham Glasgow, who went to Michigan. He gets to learn with Zeitler. And so, like, you look at those guys that he can learn from, and you're going, all right, he's not asked to go into a situation that he doesn't need to. But that's the way it is. Like, that's kind of the way you want to build your program. And I think a lot of people, they sit here and they – they say, oh, you're just picking Michigan players. Like, they said it to me, and I'm like, dude, let me just tell you this right now. I don't really want to give Michigan any credit at all.
Thank you.
But I recognize when a dog's a dog, a dog is a dog. And when a team is good, they're pretty effing good. Like there's no hate or swarm. Like, they're a good team. Like, there's nothing to shake a stick about. Like, when they're
evaluating NFL draft prospects, not having your Michigan State rivalry. You're talking NFL.
Yeah, it's like if I was if we were drafting a Buckeye, like, I would totally draft Taylor Decker over again. Like, I would totally draft a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, I would – those guys I would totally draft. You know, like, C.J. Stroud, I told everyone last year he was going to be a stud. I told him this because –
I was wrong.
Because I said there's just something about him. He's so calm and he's so poised. I'm like, I don't really care that he struggled against Michigan because he did struggle against Michigan. But – now that we see it,
Michigan in the national championship.
Yeah, but it's still the same thing. Like, I don't care where you go to school. It's just, can you play the game? Like, that's basically what it comes down to.
That's fun. So who are you slamming your fist on the table? Round one. I know you said maybe trade up, but hypothetically, they stay at 29. What do you think?
They stay at 29. I would like Darius Robinson from Missouri. I think he'd be pretty damn good. And I know a lot of people, like, there's a guy, you know, on the podcast that walked. He doesn't like Darius Robinson because he's that stereotypical big defensive end. But I look at Darius Robinson, I go, okay, I could put him next to Reader. I could put him next to, you know, on the same line as Reader, McNeil, and Hutch. And then I could maybe slide Robinson into the middle, you know, on a pass play where I can get James Houston out there. And then you got who are you going to really block? Like, let's be honest. Like, who are you going to go after? You go after
as much of a matchup game as it is on offense. It's becoming that way on defense too. Like, right. Versatility, especially in the Aaron Glenn defense, is huge. We see safeties come up and blitz, cornerbacks drop back or reverse. Like, well, they might go to like a 5-2 scheme for certain parts of the game to have all those guys in on their front seven.
Well, I loved what they did last year. They became more of a blitzing team. But I felt like they did that because they didn't have a pass rush. Like, their pass rush is really, really like, when McNeil is like your guy that had the second most pressures on the team, and it's at 54, right. Like, okay, we got to get more pressure on the quarterback. And then they started blitzing more. But, you know, if you blitz more, you're leaving these corners on the island, which, you know, like, I told a lot of people, you leave Cam Sutton on an island, it's going to be a bad news. Like, there's only a certain amount of corners in this league that you could leave on an island, and it's going to be all right.
Like, you probably name them on one or two hands.
You
look back at it, Kim Sutton really didn't do that bad. I mean, he got eaten alive. But, like, when you think about it, like you're talking about it, he did what they needed him to do, just be the scapegoat. The irony that everything happened after the season. But that aside, like, he took one for the team, literally. Like, he was getting strays everywhere. And technically, they were kind of deserving because – but they're not when you really think of it.
Yeah, I just thought their pass rush wasn't good enough. So when they blitz a lot, it opened the door for, you know, Cam Sutton to get toasted, Jerry Jacobs to get toasted, all those guys. So,
anyway, what about you, Maya? 29.
For me, I'm going with the best O lineman. I mean, considering
you gotta name the guy, dude. You gotta name
Frazier. Fine, Zach Frazier.
You're gonna go Frazier?
Yes, I'm going Frazier.
Yeah, I love Frazier.
I love him too. Because interior O line, if you think about it, Zeidler's here. What, on a 1-year deal? Still for left guard. I mean, we're sliding in Glass, got a left guard for 3 years, so we don't have to worry about that. But after Zeidler, we're gonna need Zeidler's what, 36, 37 years old. We're gonna need
he's an older guy.
Yeah, he's an older guy. We're going to need a guy to come in there and having a year to kind of learn from him and not be thrown into the fire right away would be good for a guy coming in with the Fraley system. He has time to learn, time to grow, maybe getting some reps later in the year. It'll be good. It'll be good. I think that would probably be the point of emphasis. And I know Joe probably is going to hate this, but if not him, then give me Kool-Aid.
Hey, stay on your business.
I don't have a problem with Kool-Aid. I just think that, you know, Kool-Aid gets toasted sometimes. So, you know, it's not fun. But yeah, I can go with any offensive lineman. I do think the Lions do like Kobe Sorsdahl a lot. And when I talk to some of the people that I talk to with the whole scouting background,
right,
they say when you draft a guy like Sorsdahl, who comes from like William and Mary College, you know, William and Mary, you got to give him at least a year to transition.
Oh, yeah.
To
the
NFL. At least,
because,
yeah.
Because they are nothing. I mean, I think even TJ Lang, because, you know, I've heard him say this on the with John Jansen, that, like, you know, you come from a smaller school, you need time to like develop. Like, you're not coming from the MAC to the NFL just starting day one. Like, it just doesn't happen unless you're a freakazoid that never, you know.
And he's smart. He'll get it. But there's a level of physicality. There's a level of the competition coming at you. It just takes time. It's whether is he going to be a starter in the future? Is he going to go slide in? It seems like they really want to keep him at guard. Are they going to make him a future starter there? Or is he going to be your next Coyote or your next, like, reliable number six or seven offensive lineman?
Well, the thing is with him, though, like, they like him because he stayed at William A&M because he had options to go and transfer out of there to a big-time school, but he chose to stay there. So, like, that again, like you guys were saying earlier about character and, you know, being able to stay true to your values and all that, like, staying there might have hampered him because, you know, staying at a low school like that, if he went to a higher team, probably went maybe third, second round, but staying there and finishing his story there is probably what he wanted. And coming into here, we know he has loyalty, and I think he would be a good guard, but he was benched the first year, but I don't really blame him for that, considering, you know, coming from...
You mean this Lions year?
Yeah, this Lions year. Not his
Lions
year. I mean, I can't really...
He got thrown into the fire.
Yeah.
He struggled when he was in there for most of the time, but...
Well, you
can't really blame him.
You gotta walk him, you know, along. I really don't think they expect him to start last year until they're forced into it. So
I don't even think he was expected to start last year, period. Not even any point during the year. Maybe get a couple.
Well, Jonah Jackson couldn't stay healthy to save his life. So that was number one. Like, that's why I didn't want to pay.
Backups kept getting hurt.
Skipper got hurt for a while.
Skipper got hurt for a few games.
Oshika got hurt once.
Yeah, there's one other name that I'm
Decker missing. Decker got hurt a little bit as well. Decker missed time.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, Matt. I'm drawing a blank too.
I'll think about it, but I love the idea of going offensive line in that first round. I love Frazier. I'm a big Graham Barton fan out of Duke because he can play all five positions. But I think whether it's guard or center, I don't know. I really like him. My offensive pick, I haven't decided this is going to be my final pick next week, but I love Ladd McConkey, the wide receiver out of Georgia.
Yeah.
And I know people say that he's too similar to Amon-Ra St. Brown, but like we were talking about earlier, that the mismatches that NFL offenses are trying to create now, like Ben Johnson is so smart, and there is the need to – how many people can – there's only one ball. How many people can – can you have on that offense to distribute it to? But, like, think of the mismatches that would be caused with J-Mo and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Ladd McConkey and Sam Laporta and Gibbs and maybe Donovan Peoples-Jones and Khalif Raymond. Like, McConkey can play on the outside. He actually played more on the outside at Georgia, but he can play in the slot. He's an incredibly good route runner. He's got good hands. He's faster than people think, 4.39, I think. And when Bowers got hurt, he stepped up as their number one target. Excuse me. So there's just a lot I like about him, and Roman Wilson are two of my favorite wide receivers. I don't know if I'd take Roman Wilson in the first round, but I like that type of guy, even if they're similar to St. Brown. Yeah. I like St. Brown. What's wrong with having two of those?
No, it's you're not wrong. McConkey is a guy that I do like. I do like Mitchell too, but when I saw his Mitchell? Yeah, when I saw his contested catch rate though, I was like, yeah, it's not a guy that Brett Holmes
Surprised me when I saw that too, was recent. Like, I was high on him mostly because of his measurables. Like,
right,
he is that 6'3". He's that perfect X type of receiver.
Right,
missing. But you want that X to be able to. You want his contested catch rate to be higher if that's the traditional type of receiver you're getting. If not that, yeah. I want a guy who can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and I look at Brett Holmes and all the wide receivers he drafted, even with the LA Rams. Like, I went back to LA Rams, and they all had contested catch rates over, like, I think it was, like, 30%. So if that's your barometer, okay, well, A.D. Mitchell's not the guy. But if there's a guy you're going to look for, it's Tez Walker from North Carolina. I think that could be one guy that they look at in the second round. Because when you look at Tez Walker,
he could be a second rounder.
Yeah, he could be a second rounder. Tez Walker, the thing about him is he missed half the year for the NCAA was trying to keep him out of the playing. Remember that? And then he came halfway through the year and he was kind of, you could tell that he wasn't like the same player because he was kind of like coming in like cold. And Drake May was just trying to throw this ball around to try to get, you know, top of the draft. But like he struggled with the drops a little bit, but that's because I think he came in cold and we saw it with J-Mo this year. Like J-Mo didn't start real good off the hop, but then he got better as the year went on. The same thing with Tez Walker. I think that's a guy that like, his contested for catch rate was like 31%, which is pretty damn good for a guy who played half a year.
They like North Carolina wide receivers.
Yeah, they do. Antoine Green. So they obviously scouted them. So that's another thing. But yeah, is there any guy? Just the last question I got for you, Mayock, and everything. But is there any guy like south of the third round that you would look at like as a guy that could potentially be like the Lions type guy? I'm not saying like a culture guy, but I'm saying like a guy that fits them to a T. And I think there's one in particular but I'll let you guys go first.
Not for
Mike,
me.
You go first.
I need more time to like scout the draft and actually go that far.
You got a week to go, Mayock.
Not a draft guy. I told you, I'm a free agent. I'm a free agent guy.
You're a free agency.
Guy.
Awareness, baby. Awareness. Yeah. Your awareness ratings are up high.
Yeah, man. If I need draft news, I'll look at your posts.
Exactly. I got you. Yeah, hey, I'm no expert yet. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. I'm deep into this, but this is going into my second year doing this. So I'm just trying to soak up as much information. That's why I love talking to you guys. That's why I put out that post that you guys responded to. Like, this is all about hearing so many different people's opinions. It's you can do mock drafts. You can do this or that. Like the guys you've selected or brought up, like you have a reason you thought about that and you gave your explanation. I like that. And that's what everything gets into such a big debate these days. None of us know what Brett Holmes is going to do. I'm interested to hear. I would have never thought about Tez Walker. I've heard his name and I've kind of glossed over him, but I'm going to go home tonight and I'm going to look at him a little bit more. Like, go that's look what him this up. Is about.
Go look him up. It's actually would be like it'd be like the perfect pick for J-Mo. St. Brown, he's kind of that XY receiver that, you know, he's got some size to him. He's also got some speed to him too, so he can burn. Yeah, but he just
wild card and all. Oops, sorry.
Yeah, I think he felt well. You're good. You can interrupt me whenever you want. I don't care. But it's like the way I looked at it was like he started slow like J-Mo, and that's what happened. And he obviously with the NFL, they have more games than college football, so. That's kind of what I look. But if you look at him, just go look at his ratings on Pro Football Focus, just kind of get a glimpse, and then go turn on that highlight tape, and you'll be like, all right, this is a guy I could deal with. Yeah.
So there are three that pop into my mind, and I won't go into all three, but I just have to mention them because they're stuck in my head right now. Javon Solomon, edge rusher out of Troy, he's like James Houston. Like that's probably the downside that – he's a little smaller. He's a specialist. He's a pass rushing specialist. He actually led the NCAA in sacks. He had 16 at Troy. I really like him. I really like Cooper Beebe, offensive lineman, a guard from Kansas State. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a super productive pro. And then what I think may be a fifth round or later cornerback, Dwight Nudy McGlothern. His nickname is Nudy. Dwight McGlothern out of Arkansas. So SEC football, he started his career at LSU, and he struggled his freshman year. And he's just slowly but surely, not even slowly, but each year, he's improved drastically. And I think he's in like the top 10, top 8 in terms of man coverage grade per PFF, which take that for what it is. The fact that he's at two different SEC schools going against big-time wide receivers, he's continued to get better where he is the number one at Arkansas. I think he's had a couple injury questions. I don't think anything serious, but I want to say he's 6'2", you know, 200 pounds. He's that big outside cornerback that could be a good fit for the Lions late in the draft.
Yeah, there's a couple. So I got three, too. I'll give you the three.
Nice.
One is Dylan McMahon. I think you can get him probably later in the draft. He's out of NC State.
North Dakota State?
North Carolina.
NC State.
Yeah, yeah. But he's a talented player. I think he was very good in pass blocking. He's decent in run blocking. But, again, when you get him, you could shove him away for a year, let him learn the system, let him learn under Ragnow. There ain't no better player to learn than under Ragnow. Bro. And then the second guy I'm going to go with is now a lot of people are going to be like, he's a Michigan player, and I'll say I don't care what you have to say because I really don't care, but it's Zach Zinner. I think you get these guys in later in the draft, awesome, because Zinner is not going to start right away. We all know that. He's still recovering from the leg injury. Well, that's good because you got Zeitler starting and you got Glasgow starting. So he doesn't have to start. He doesn't have to come into play, and they don't have to rush him. So that's the guy I look at with, like, a guy like, if you really want an offensive lineman late in the draft, these are two guys that you could really look at, because if they wanted to go wide receiver in the first or second round, they could do that. Like, that's just the way it goes. But the corner that I really like the most is Cam Hart out of Notre Dame.
All right.
So he's a big dude. He's a big dude, but he could also hold his own. So he's kind of speedy. But you look at him looked at games like with USC, right? Braden Rice and all those speedy guys. Like, I'm like, all right, he did a damn good job there. Like, he did good against good competition. So Cam Hart from Notre Dame is another one. And then if you want a wide receiver who has this is the fourth one, but if you want a wide receiver who has NFL lineage, Braden Rice.
Oh yeah. The more I watch him, the more I like Brendan Rice. But even taking aside him as a player for the Lions, like DNA, like professional athlete / former NFL player DNA, I love that, especially in prospects coming out of the draft. The Pat Surtains, the J.C. Horns, the guys who have been around the game, been in the locker rooms as kids. Yeah. I mean, come on. Can you imagine Sundays at Ford Field with Barry Sanders, Jerry Rice, Calvin Johnson? Like, I'm cool with having all that in the building. That's some serious DNA.
There's another guy that has pro potential. He's actually going to be – I think he's going to be a second-round pick, to be honest. But
what position?
This is a guy who his dad played for the Lions.
Oh, Jonah Ellis.
Jonah Ellis. His pass rush win rate was 17%. He was good against the pass, good against the rush. He did pretty good in the run stop, so that's another guy you look at.
Dude, like, has a motor. He is Dan Campbell personified. Like, he's more a nicer human being. Like, he's gritty and all, but like, he's not the most talented athlete, but he is a that motor never stops. Opposite Aiden Hutchinson, I covered him a little bit this morning on our morning show. I wake up Woodward, and the more I watch him, the more I like him. And you brought up Robert Porche earlier in the day, and his dad and Porche, that tandem in the, was it that late 90s? He was a 99, 2000. Porche was like, he's what got me into football. It was Porche. Then I fell in love with Javon Curse. Once I saw these freak edge rushers or defensive ends, as they used to call them. Porche and Luther Ellis was that, they started football for me. I would love Jonah Ellis.
I just look at him and I'm like, man, I know he, first of all, I love Utah players because I think they play with a Dan Campbell type of grit. So that's what I look at with these guys. But we got a week to the draft, so it's going to be interesting. And if you guys are new to, like, I'm sure you guys know what Woodward Sports is, but Matt's on the morning show, so go show him love. Podcast, so follow him on Twitter. Actually, we'll put your Twitter link in the link below on the Spotify and everything. Perfect. So and Mayock, we'll put his Twitter link too, but, you know, he's busy getting roasted by Meek Robertson, so we'll be fine. But thank you guys for listening to the Detroit Lions News podcast. It was a good podcast. I enjoyed it. So we got to have you on again, Matt. And
let's do it.
I got to have you on when someday in the summer about talking baseball, because this Tigers team, even though they won today, they did win today. But
Did they win?
Yeah, they won.
But the offense, we're pitchers, but we got to deal with this offense, you know. But we'll see you guys on the next Detroit Lions News podcast. Obviously, we have a couple things coming this week. We have the regular podcast tomorrow, which will come out Thursday. And then I'm doing a live, if you guys want to join or anything, I'm doing a live when the uniform gets debuted, because I feel like people want to talk about the uniform. So we'll do that, because I know people really
care. People do want to talk about it.
So we'll do that, because I notice people love the uniform. Like, they keep asking me, and I'm like, it's going to be like an homage to a classic. But I'm going to give you guys a little hint. They kind of based it off the Bronco. Just a little FYI.
Oh, some inside information.
That's all I can say Detroit right now.
Lions podcast, baby.
Yeah, you got it. All right, we'll see you guys in the next podcast, which is tomorrow. And we'll talk more Lions football. Obviously, the draft is coming. So we got less. We got, what, we got a week to go? Yeah, we got by Thursday, we'll have a week to go. So, yeah. So we're next Thursday.
Time flies.
Next Thursday is happening. All right, we'll see you guys.
Have a good one. While we're live, thank you.